book genres are so 20th century. No, 19th century. They made sense when each book needed to be placed on a physical shelf so people could find similar titles. But what if you want to find a vampire romance, a post-apocalyptic comedy, a Western mystery where the main character is an android, a World War II adventure with magic, or a story based around a character of any race or religion or gender, set in any time or any place you choose? Scribble now brings searching for books into the 21st century, even if you're looking for one set in the 17th. Find the books you'll love by selecting the story elements that matter to you at Scribble.com. You'll never look for books the same way again. Search by story elements, only at Scribble.com. That's Scribble.com.
Welcome to the serialized short story audiobook collection, Bones Are White, by Scott Sigler. Get the stories in Bones Are White for all ebook readers at scottsigler.com/bonesarewhite, or from that same page as a full-length audiobook. You can also buy the ebook version directly from the Kindle Store, the Nook Store, Apple's iBooks, and from Google Play. This book contains harsh language, adult situations, and lots of violence. So if you're easily offended, cue up some Taylor Swift and enjoy.
Beam Up on IO5 by Scott Sigler. Read for you by Justin Robert Young. Walmart bargains.
I like Walmart, Brock said. Can we get some snacks when we're done? I'm hungry.
Now, I said.
I told you to eat before we left.
I did, Brock said. I ate a pot pie and a lobster.
Lobsters. So disgusting.
Ground insect biomass pressed into a mold and then spray painted with an instantly hardening chitin. I'd rather eat the ass end of a camel, and those have been extinct for centuries. They grow the insects in the middle of the station. Suckers get real big in lower G, I'm told. I try not to think about the fact that the bug's main food source is human waste. The mayor's all big on her self-sustaining by 70 campaign. God's damn Green Party. New Hoboken is a space station, not farmland. Food's always going to be imported. No matter how many times bugs become food, which becomes poop, which becomes food for bugs, and so on. Still, the ground-up bugs are edible. Good protein. A budget-conscious heavyweight like Brock's gotta eat, I guess. 245 pounds requires a lot of intake just to keep going. And the way that guy trains, I'm not surprised he eats lobsters. As long as he keeps away from the beef and the begs, I'm good. So much shit in Walmart. Who buys this? 2-for-1 exosuits. Yeah, like I'm going hull crawling in a bargain exosuit on sale in a bin next to a 10-pack of freeze-dried mice on one side and 40-ounce bottles of Dharma beer on the other. Brock stopped at the end cap and picked up a 30-roll toilet paper bundle. He smiled his missing incisor smile and held it up so I could see it, as if I wouldn't see a goddamn cubic meter of ass wipe just fine.
Rabbi, it's $99, Brock said. That's a bargain. We should get a cart.
Brock, you giant pile of retard. We're here on business. This ain't the time for coupon scanning. Put it down. Brock's smile faded.
But, Rabbi, I was here yesterday, and they had a sale on canned figs.
How many cans did you eat?
3, he said. Then another for breakfast before I had the lobster. It's not agreeing with me is all I'm saying.
It wasn't that Brock had a sensitive digestive system, per se. It was more that he couldn't stop eating food that gave him the Hoboken hot step.
Brock, we're not here to shop. Come on, we're running late. We were supposed to get to the president before he came in. Can we hurry it up?
He set the oh-so-cheap mountain of toilet paper back on the shelf. He sighed. He looked sad. Brock can do that. He can also knock you the fuck out, which is why I bring him. Me? I can also knock you the fuck out, but it takes me longer. And honestly, I'd just rather not. Trouble is, I weigh all of 150. People take one look at me, if they haven't seen me in the octagon, that is, and think they don't have to listen to what I say. When I bring Brock Big Ugly Sockman along, people do listen. They listen real close. My name is Joseph Manischewitz. Back in my fighting days, they called me the Rabid Rabbi. That's kind of funny, seeing as I don't even follow the religion. I wouldn't know kosher from gopher. But I have the Jew gene. Got it from my mom. The fact that she passed away when I was a teenager and I've never seen the inside of a synagogue doesn't seem to matter. After my mother died, my dad and grandpa moved us to New Hoboken for the same reason as most. Dad to work in the Nobium refinery, grandpa to retire. You don't exactly move to the orbit of Venus for the culture, know what I mean? Things on Earth were so shitty, it wasn't worth sticking around for the final swan song. Everyone over the age of 65 who could afford to leave already had. We immigrated when I was 15. When I arrived, I got the mandatory gene testing required for New Hoboken citizenship. What do you know? I was Jewish. Surprised the hell out of my dad. That whole race or religion thing sort of got worked out in 2095 when they discovered the Jew gene. Something in the mitochondrial DNA that's only passed down from mother to child. We weren't Jewish by faith. We weren't part of a culture. But your ancestry percentages go on your official record. The kids in my class found out, and presto, I was rabbi from then on. I could give a squirt of piss one way or another, but the Jews on this station help each other out more often than not. That means they help me. They just assume I'm part of their club. So they want to do things for me. That suits me just fine. That support certainly helped my fighting career. I fought all over the solar system. Started out 5-0 as a pro. I didn't fight anyone of note in those first 5 matches. But that didn't matter to my people. Once word got out that Joseph the Rabid Rabbi Manischewitz was an up-and-coming lightweight, my career was covered on every Jew blog, Jew paper, Jew site, and Jew news show in the solar system. They loved me. By my 6th fight, I was walking to the octagon while sold-out crowds cheered, Mazel Tov! Mazel Tov! Mazel Tov! When I got bigger fights against better opponents, I started to lose. No one? The Jews didn't care. I mean, they didn't give a rat's ass that I only won 9 of my next 30 fights. They still packed the house every time I put on the gloves. For my last fight, 16,000 people packed into Jupiter Gardens. Wish I would have won that one. Would have been nice to go out at least 500. As it was, I walked away from the fight game with a record of 16, 17, and 2. Got knocked out in that last fight, by the way. At least I made it into the second round. Still, when they woke me up, I got a standing ovation. They screamed Mazel Tov when I left, just like they did when I entered. Going into that last match, I'd lost 3 in a row. It was time to hang up the gloves and try something else. The refinery? Not in this lifetime, pal. Move somewhere else? Like the stations around Jupiter? I kind of like New Hoboken. And even if I did move, what did I know how to do besides punch people in the face? If I was going to go freelance with that rather limited skill set, might as well do it at home where more people knew my rep. Brock and I kept walking. His eyes lingered on bargains, but his feet kept moving. Our Mark did his fruit shopping every morning at 9, and it was already a quarter past. Brock sighed. Do we really have to beat up the president? I like him. Yeah, so do I said. Maybe you'll have the money and we won't have to do anything. I hope that was the case. Who wanted to punch the president? We passed aisle 4. A holo on the end cap had a lady in a blue vest telling us we could save 50% on a supersized pack of diapers. I could tell Brock wanted to buy some, which is kind of awesome considering he doesn't have any kids. We hit the produce area in aisle 5 and saw him, the president. John Kahn, 2-time president of the powerful New Hoboken Association of Retired Persons. He wasn't the president of NHARA anymore. He lost the last election to Ellen DeGeneres Jr., thanks in part to DeGeneres being backed by the mining union and in part to John's pizza porn scandal. The thing some people are into, I swear. He wasn't the president anymore. Hadn't been for 4 years, but everyone still called him by that name. Word was he was running again, and his chances looked decent. The election was a couple days away, I guess. I don't follow the goddamn political maneuverings of the New Hoboken retirement community, so sue me. John Kahn was well known and highly predictable. He shopped in the same stores at the same times every day. That many was easy to find. Too bad for him. Old and bald with deep laugh lines around the eyes, the president stared at the grapes like they were some kind of complicated math problem. He didn't notice us walk up to him. "Mr. President," I said, "Chad Letilton sends his greetings." John looked up quickly as if we just slipped a knife between his ribs. Brock and I have done this before. I stand in front of the mark. Brock stands right behind me. I'm 5'7", he's 6'3", and wears boots with big heels to make him stand 6'5 or so. Something about the whole head looking over the top of mine is extra intimidating. John looked at me, then above me, to Brock, then at me again. "Hi, Rabbi," he said. "Any chance this is just a little schmooze?" A schmooze. Hebrew for chat. "Sure, Mr. President," I said. "I'm all kinds of chatty. Watch me be all chatty right now. Say, Mr. President, how's the produce today?" He shrugged. "Not a good batch of grapes. They don't have any imports this week. These are local from the farm pods. You know how that is. I think those surveillance squirrels aren't doing their job and the shitbugs are getting in." He pointed to a cluster of grapes. "I'm pretty sure this bunch is fucking plastic." Sure enough, they did look like plastic. A dull shine of green set amidst the other, obviously biological grapes. Who the fuck puts plastic grapes in the produce section? "A shame," I said. "No quality control these days." There, I was social. "If you don't mind, I'll skip asking you about the weather. The social custom I'm interested in now, Mr. President, is the exchange of goods and services, notably a certain amount of money you borrowed from Mr. Letilton. You owe that money back, Mr. President, plus interest." He licked his old man lips. "I have the money," he said. "I need it for my re-election campaign. It's just a little tied up right now. It's not liquid." A big hand connected to a big arm reached over my shoulder and pointed at John.
"You're gonna be liquid," Brock said. "Mr. Letilton wants his money."
I was torn. Brock had spoken out of turn, but damn, that was a pretty good line. For him, anyway. I tapped my friend's tree trunk of an arm. "Brock, I got this." The big pointing finger retreated. John's eyes turned back to me.
"Rabbi, let me talk to Mr. Letilton. I can give him something worth way more than just money. Way more."
I shook my head. "No more talking. You give me the money, and if you like, I'll take you and the money to see Mr. Letilton. What you two discuss ain't my business. What is my business is getting Mr. Littilton's money back. So, take me to it right now, or Brock here is going to see that you eat your grapes through a straw. The president's eyes narrowed. Wouldn't the skins get stuck in the straw? I mean, even if they were pureed.
Yeah, Brock said. I tried to make a grape protein shake once. The skin were like little boogers in there. It was gross.
Later, I'd have to have a chat with Brock about speaking out of turn. Fine, I said. Then grape juice through a straw.
I already drink grape juice through a straw, the president said.
Behind me, Brock grunted in agreement.
I like grape juice. You can get that on sale, usually.
These guys were pissing me off. Eating grapes through a straw was a good line. What did these two morons know about clever?
Both of you, shut the fuck up, I said.
Mr. President, allow me to rephrase. Give me the money now, or Brock here has to hit you in the mouth repeatedly until your teeth fall out. John reached up and slid his fingers into his mouth. He wiggled, then pulled out dentures and held them up.
I don't have any peep.
You know what? Forget Brock. I was going to punch this smart-ass old fucker myself. He put the dentures back in his mouth.
Listen, Rabbi, I can get you the money, okay? Just come with me and I'll take you right to it.
Now we were talking. Where?
Con Carney's, he said.
I found that hard to believe. You keep your money at a dive bar on deck 17?
Not in the bar, Rabbi. I have to talk to someone there, okay?
I nodded. I hoped he wasn't blowing sunshine up my ass. I really did not want to hit an old dude. Excuse me. Have Brock hit an old dude.
Sure thing, Mr. President, I said.
Let's go. And then the grapes moved. The plastic ones. They bounced up like they'd been sitting on top of a spring. Brock and I reacted automatically, sidestepping away from the motion and turning to face it, our fists instantly in front of our faces to ward off whatever might come. When you've spent your adult life in the octagon, your body just does these things without needing your thought or permission. President John Kahn had not spent his adult life in the octagon. He saw the plastic grapes bounce up. He didn't flinch away. He just looked at them. Maybe he saw the metal filament shoot out of the bunch. Maybe not. The silvery ribbon hit him right between the eyes. It punched through the bridge of his nose. I know that because I've heard a crunch like that more times than I can count. Every pro fighter has heard it. John's eyes went wide, but only for a second, before his head exploded. I was fast enough to move away from the bouncing grapes. I wasn't fast enough to dodge flying brains. Bloody crap splattered all over my face and chest. John's now headless body collapsed. His whole head wasn't gone, really. Just everything from the lower jaw up. On that jaw, his bottom dentures were still there, clinging to the bloody gums. The top half was somewhere else, along with his skull, tongue, brains, and eyes. Blood oozed out of the half head and pooled on the white tile floor. A lady screamed. Maybe she was new in town. A dead body is nothing new in New Hoboken. I looked at Brock. He was also covered in gore. His face was, anyway. His body remained clean, because mine had blocked most of the blood and bone.
That's gross, he said. I'm not shopping here anymore, and I sure as fuck ain't buying their produce.
Right. Like he was going to pay more somewhere else. The price guarantee is a double-edged sword, my friends. I looked back to the body and the spreading blood. A lady walked up. She wore the blue vest of a Walmart employee. She looked at the body, then at me.
You guys do this?
I shook my head. When I did, something fell off my hair and splatted lightly onto the tile. It was the president's tongue. So that's where it went.
Wasn't us, I said. We were just talking. Surveillance cameras will clear us.
She tapped her Walmart badge twice. The badge had Marge printed on it.
We need a bio beam up on aisle 5,
she said, her voice amplified by the store's sound system.
Repeat, we need a bio beam up on aisle 5 and a mop and some hoses.
I wiped at my face, then flung the mess to the floor.
Brock, come on, we gotta go.
We had to get out of there. We weren't going to be arrested or anything, as the security cameras would show that we hadn't touched the president. But New Hoboken's finest would want to talk to us, and we didn't have the time for that nonsense. They'd find us eventually, and that was fine. For now, however, we had someplace we needed to be. Fast. Who had killed the president? I had no idea. And to tell you the truth, I really didn't give a shit. Does that sound callous? Sure. But I had more important things to worry about than some old dead dude. I had to go tell Chad Latilton that I hadn't recovered his money. Everyone report to the dance floor. New Hoboken isn't the greatest place in the solar system. Sure, I know that. While it has many good points, the bad points are really bad. Deck 17? That's the baddest of the bad points. If the cops go down there at all, they go in fours and usually in riot gear. Translation? Cops don't go down there much at all. So, of course, that's where Chad Latilton stays.
I don't like Deck 17, Brock said. It scares me.
You're a big pussy, I said. If I was your size, nothing would scare me.
Yeah, how about hookers with razors in their mouths?
I stopped walking. Hookers with razors in their mouths? Brock nodded. And this actually happened to you? He nodded again.
Know that old line about how the worst blowjob you ever had was still pretty good?
Yeah.
Well, that line is bullshit.
How the hell did you wind up with your dick in the mouth of a hooker who was also inclined to keep razors in said mouth? He shrugged.
She had a squirrel costume on. You know how it is.
I do not, I said. I most certainly do not know how it is, Brock. A squirrel costume?
I like squirrels.
Apparently. Apparently, you like them more than most. So, what happened? You still have the little heavyweight down there, right?
I still have it, he said. She wanted money, so I gave it to her.
How much money? Brock shook his head like I was the stupid one.
All of it, Rabbi. Did you miss the part where I said she had a razor in her mouth? Maybe you would have tried to Jew her down.
That's racist.
So's a razor against your dick.
I sighed. No, Brock. A razor against your dick is not racist. Racism implies a prejudicial assertion based solely on stereotypes and not on fact. A razor against your dick is fact, not a belief or a doctrine. He thought about it and nodded.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of words.
Another fact is I don't like Deck 17. It scares me.
Brock Sockman wasn't afraid of much. This particular phobia, however, I could understand. We walked down Deck 17's main drag, a long tram road with wide side decks on the left and the right. The place was a dump, even by New Hoboken standards. The road was wide enough for the tram that rotated through every hour, at least when it wasn't broken down, mind you, which was more often than not. The tram stops every 200 feet. People get on, people get off, and that's fine. But the tram is also the main cargo hauling system down here. If one of the shops has to load or unload, you'll sit for 10 minutes more. Most of the time, it's just faster to walk. When the tram comes through, you move to the side decks. When it passed, you move back onto the road. Shops lined either side. Many of them were open for business, selling groceries, liquor and beer, used clothing, the same stuff you'd find in any ghetto anywhere in the solar system. Many of the storefronts were sealed up, most of those with yellow police tape. Some of the doors had burn marks, which is a pretty big indicator of how bad things could get down here. On a space station, fire is not your friend. Brock and I got a lot of looks. Most are smiles and expressions of surprise. New Hoboken loves the fight game. I was only a couple of years retired, so people still knew my face. Brock was still fighting. He was much more recognizable because he's had some big-ticket fights. 3 times he's taken on the number one contender to earn a shot at the title. He lost all 3 times in spectacular fashion. I'm pretty sure Brock's chances are done. He'll never get another shot at the strap. But when he fights hard. He puts on a good show. People love him for it. Still, he's a pro heavyweight. That means every palooka in a place like Deck 17 sizes him up. Wonders if they could have been a contender. Sometimes they step up. When they do, it doesn't last long. Brock Big Ugly Sockman might have taken a few too many punches. He might get his ass kicked by the solar system's elite fighters. But the solar system only has about 20 elite heavyweights. For the other 17 billion citizens, Big Ugly can whoop any of them in a fair fight. Of course, a fair fight on Deck 17 is harder to find than a virgin. At least a virgin you can't buy anyway. But who can afford virgins these days? The refinery business ain't what it used to be, and times are tough all over. We headed toward a shop with a bunch of working girls hanging out front. Latilton's place. One of the girls was wearing a bunny costume. Not like in those old Playboy holos either. I mean, she looked like an actual rabbit, fully furred and with the big teeth. Brock, leave her be. Brock looked at her. Then he looked at me, like there was something wrong with me.
Rabbi, she's dressed like a rabbit. That's sick. I'm not a perv.
Sockman, there's no one like him anywhere in the universe. Were I religious, I'd thank the gods for that. Come on, Big Ugly, we have to report in. We walked through the girls. They were nice enough, if you were into addicts and venereal disease. I like my cock attached to my body as opposed to falling off of it, so these girls weren't my type. The girls Latilton kept inside, though, a different story. Past the girls, there was a door, and inside that, a plain office with a plain table. 2 big fuckers were sitting at the table. They weren't the pair who usually worked this time of day, but I recognized them, Bobby and Ronnie. Ronnie wore an orange 3-piece suit, while Bobby's duds were light blue. Latilton likes his colors. They were playing cards. On the table in front of them were piles of money and a nail gun the size of my head. it's impossible to get an actual firearm on New Hoboken Station. Get caught with one, get executed. Pretty simple and damn effective. Most of the nasty work here gets done with knives, shivs, and industrial tools. Nail guns are in that gray area between construction equipment and illegal weaponry. Both of the toughs looked up. They acknowledged me, but only because I was the guy Littleton talked to. They nodded more respectfully at Brock, who nodded back. Both of the guys were bigger than Brock, which was saying something. If these guys had been raised here and reared on that bug meal crap, then that bug meal was goddamn nutritious, I'll tell you that. Bobby and Ronnie had both taken their shot at the title, so to speak, and both had found out there's a big difference between beating up some deadbeat and taking a swing at a professional fighter. I don't know what it is with the big guys. It's like they always have to find out who has the largest metaphorical cock. If there was a deck reserved for men who weighed more than 225 pounds, the walls would drip with territorial pissing. Ronnie, I said to the guy in the orange suit. Bobby, I said to the guy in the blue suit. Where are Ricky and Mike?
They had to cool it, Ronnie said. They gotta watch out for a bit. They did some work for Mr. Littleton. Something about a girl. I don't know. He's waiting for you inside.
Ronnie tilted his head toward the back of the room, toward a rusted iron door. Littleton was waiting for us? I wondered if news had spread as fast as the president's brains had when the grapes of wrath had done their thing. Brock and I walked to the iron door. It was rusted. You have to do that shit on purpose, you know. The rust, I mean. They solved the rust problem like 50 years ago. Everywhere but Deck 18, of course. But rust is the least of concerns to the lost souls down there. Littleton likes the look of rust, maybe. There were openings and nozzles on either side of the door, above it, and even a few recessed into the floor. All kinds of stuff in those. Cameras, mostly. But also tasers, spike shooters, a water hose, even a flamethrower. A fucking flamethrower. This is the entry point to Littleton's kingdom, and he wants you to know you pass through the gates only by his invite. There was a buzzing sound, then the clank of hidden metal bars sliding back. The door opened. Inside waited another world. A noisy one, full of thumping music. None of the ghetto dinginess here. Chad Littleton liked to club. The man himself was in the middle of the lighted dance floor. Colors flashed from the sides, from above and below. He shook his money maker, twisted and turned. I don't know how he didn't sweat in a pink three-piece suit like that, especially with the matching fedora. But he was all smiles and sexy eyes for the five girls dancing with him. And those girls, for a price you could have any of them. A big price. Those girls were the reason that Brock Sockman had to do muscle jobs like this. He made big bucks for those fights, and he spent those bucks on working girls. The hottest hookers in New Hoboken were on that floor, dancing along with Chad Littleton. And at the back edge of the glowing dance floor, I saw the thing of rumors. The thing that made Chad Littleton so feared. There was a body on the floor. I'm no doctor, but judging by the knife handle sticking out of his chest, I felt safe in assuming the guy was dead. There was a fuzzy little dog standing on the guy, its little front paws close to the knife, his rear paws balancing on the corpse's face. No, not standing. The dog was squatting.
It's true, Brock said. Pockets really does that.
I nodded. There had always been a rumor that Chad Littleton had trained his Pomeranians to shit on the forehead of his dead enemies. It was so ridiculous, such an outlandish gangster legend, I just assumed it was a myth. It wasn't. I walked onto the dance floor, now dreading the meeting even more. He saw us coming. Latilton stopped doing the robot and shifted to a slow, side-to-side sway.
"Rabbi, big ugly," he said. "You have the funds I sent you to procure?"
There was a problem, Mr. Latilton, I said.
"The president..." "You're not dancing," Latilton said. "Something wrong with my music? You don't like my club?"
Damn, did I hate coming here. "No, Mr. Latilton, this place is awesome." I started dancing, if you can call it that. I tried my best to emulate Latilton's sway. I felt the floor shaking beneath me from Brock's big feet. Sockman liked to boogie. Latilton smiled.
"There you go, my man. Dancing will set you free. Go on with your story."
"There was a small problem," I said. "Someone killed John Kahn." Latilton nodded, adjusted his fedora.
"So I heard. I don't care about that. What I care about is the money I sent you to get for me."
I stopped dancing for a moment, then started up as soon as I realized I wasn't obeying Latilton's weird protocol.
I just told you the president is dead. How can I get money from a dead man? The job is done.
Latilton did three spins, eyes locking on me each time they came around. He stopped and stared, his hands near his hips, fingers snapping to the beat.
"I sent you to get my money, Rabbi. You don't have my money. Ergo, the job is not done."
He put his hands on his hips and shook them side to side. A girl fell in on either side of him, grinding up against him and matching his movements.
"You took a job, Rabbi," Latilton said. "If you had done that job and got to the president sooner, the president would not be dead and I would have my money. Therefore, this is your fault. You either finish the job I hired you to do, or someone is going to collect the money from you."
I stopped dancing. Latilton did not. Judging from the vibrations rattling the floor, neither did Brock Sockman. Latilton grabbed a girl and pulled her close. They stepped together, their feet matching, 1, 2, 3 forward, then 1, 2, 3 back. He tilted his head toward the corpse with the little pile of Pomeranian poop on his forehead.
"Rabbi, you see Shecky Goldberg back there? He disappointed me. If you don't bring me that money, I'll be disappointed in you."
The job had been so simple. Get the president's money, collect 10% as a recovery fee. Now the wrath of grapes meant Brock and I were on the hook for money. A lot of money. I grabbed Brock's arm and tried to pull him off the floor. "Come on." Brock planted his feet.
"But this is the breakdown," he said. "I love this part. It's got a nice beat. You can dance to it."
I dragged harder, pulling him off balance a little. "Brock, move!" He sighed his heavy sigh and followed me out of the club. We walked out of the club and back into the shop. The big iron door slammed shut behind us.
"Oh, Rabbi, why don't you want to dance a little? You're too stuffy."
"Why don't I want to dance? I wanted to hit someone. I had enough self-control to not let that someone be big ugly."
"I don't want to dance, Brock, because Chad Latilton just decided that we're responsible for the president's debt."
Brock stopped walking. He stared at me, trying to see if I was kidding. I wasn't.
"Oh," he said. "It's kind of ironic."
"What is?"
"That we were talking about razor blades and dicks earlier, 'cause this feels about the same as that did."
He was right. Brock Sockman, poet. at least when it came to getting blowjobs from whores in squirrel costumes. "Come on," I said. "We have to figure out what's up, and fast."
"How are we gonna do that?"
"We have to find out who killed the president. Maybe they wanted his money. We find that killer, maybe we find the money."
"Who's gonna know who killed the president?"
Poor Brock. I knew where this would end up. "We have to talk to Con Carney." His whole body seemed to sag.
"Con Carney? Are you sure we gotta talk to her?"
I shrugged. "It's that or the razor blades." He sagged a little bit more, then sighed his heaviest sigh of the day.
"Okay."
We walked toward the meatpacking district.
You have been listening to The Bones Are White, serialized short story audiobook, written by Scott Sigler. This audiobook was produced by A. Kovacs and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author or to hear his free weekly fiction podcast, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Greed by the band Separation of Sanity.
I am a creeping cancer, rots you to the core, pumping through your blackened heart, seduction of your soul, separation of your senses, sanity, your currency. I am your rolling gun, on your knees, kiss the screen.
Every 5 minutes, a transplant candidate dies while waiting for a compatible heart, liver, or kidney. Imagine a technology that could provide those life-saving transplant organs for a high price, and imagine what a company would do to monopolize that technology. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists unlocks this holy grail of medicine by reverse engineering the genomes of all mammals, creating an animal with organs perfectly suitable for human transplantation. They envisioned a docile herd animal, but one team member had another, darker vision. This ancestor is anything but docile. The team's work spawned something big, something evil, something very, very hungry. Ancestor is a complete serialized fiction podcast by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler, with all episodes available. Binge the entire story now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.